Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, joined here by Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you from our studios at Lambeau Field, and Wes, Packers-Falcons coming up on Sunday afternoon. Let's take a little bit of a closer look at the Atlanta Falcons, starting on offense. They are number one in the league in total yards, number one in the league in points. There's nothing statistically strange or goofy about that in terms of where this team is ranked. We've talked a lot about Julio Jones already this week, 800-plus yards receiving. He's averaging, I believe, 20 yards per catch. Tell us about some of the other weapons that Matt Ryan has at his disposal that has gotten this offense to the level that it is.
Well, I think Devontae Freeman is the guy that I think a lot of people will talk about, because last year he was sort of going to be the complimentary back, and then Tevin Coleman comes down with an injury and suddenly, you know, becomes a really productive member of that offense for them. So it's kind of become a two-headed monster a little bit, but now with Coleman dealing with this hamstring injury, some reports already were out as early as Sunday night saying that he was going to miss this game. So we'll have to see what happens there. They did sign Stephen Ridley as possible insurance for him. But Freeman's an interesting player in that he can do a lot of different things for them. Coleman tends to be more their receiving type running back. But, okay. I mean, whatever way that they need to use him in the offense, as we've talked about in the past, with how quickly Matt Ryan gets rid of the ball and distributes the ball, a lot of times those running backs come into play in a big way for their receiving game.
Yeah, for sure. I think we saw on the highlights, certainly, when Atlanta got that big win at Denver over Denver's very stout defense, they really used that two-headed monster at running back with Freeman and Coleman. And yeah, if Coleman is going to miss this game, that's potentially a big loss for the Falcons. He actually leads them in the scoring department with 6 touchdowns on the year. So maybe a little bit more of the load falling towards Devontae Freeman. Mohamed Sanu, another wide receiver for them who seems to be off to a pretty productive start. Obviously, a lot of attention goes to Julio Jones, but what can you tell us about Sanu?
Yeah, Sanu, they brought him over from Cincinnati this offseason, and he'd kind of been the running mate with A.J. Green there the last 4 or 5 years now, and now he comes into Atlanta in this offense. He has pretty prototypical size, 6'2", 210, but the thing that's always kind of distinguished him, I think, is a lot of what he can do is sort of that complementary receiver. Many ways what that Golden Tate kind of receiver was to Kelvin Johnson in terms of giving them a nice compliment. His numbers through 7 games, I mean, it's not huge. 23 catches for 258 yards and 2 touchdowns. Obviously, a lot of that offense has been running through Julio Jones, but he's a guy they're going to have to be cognizant of. And I know with Demetri Goodson and the rest of the secondary, as much as we're going to be talking about Julio Jones throughout the weeks, Sanu was brought in for that very reason, to be a guy that could potentially take off some of that pressure and also be someone that secondaries have to account for.
Yeah, interesting with the start that Matt Ryan is off to. I believe his passer rating is around 113 through this early stage of the season. A lot of people wondered last season when the Falcons kind of fell off after that fast start, you know, was Matt Ryan potentially going to, you know, was he on a decline or whatever? He certainly seems to have answered those naysayers. It helps to have Julio Jones healthy, don't get me wrong. Right. He's had some injury problems, and when he's not in there, this offense is different. But certainly no signs of decline for Matt Ryan so far in 2016.
No, and that's one of the things, too, is he's protecting the football. 16 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. He's been there in these last few seasons. It just seems like he's kind of gotten behind the eight ball a little bit in the turnover department. But when he's taking care of the football, we all know what he can do in terms of as a quarterback. And when guys get hot, as we talked about, they don't get any hotter than Matt Ryan in terms of what he can do on a football field and do with his arms. So it's a little bit of a transition year. You know, Roddy White's no longer in that lineup. They had to make some adjustments. You know, and really the biggest thing for him, I think, is starting to become that veteran presence on this team where, he's starting to be the most veteran guy, the oldest guy in that locker room, and what are you going to do with it? And certainly there's been some highs and lows here the last few seasons, but the fact that the Falcons have committed to him and still really have pinpointed him as their franchise quarterback, I think says a lot about their confidence and also what he could do on really any given Sunday.
Yeah, and another guy to watch out for in terms of a veteran kicker, Matt Bryant. This is a guy who's made a lot of clutch kicks over the course of his career, and he only has one miss so far this season, and it was his last kick. It was a 58-yard try at the end of regulation last week against San Diego to try to win that game, and I believe he hit the upright with it.
I believe you're right, yeah.
I mean, a 58 58-yarder almost won that game. But that's the only kick he's missed. And this is a guy who's, as I said, made a lot of clutch kicks in his career, particularly in the Georgia Dome.
He has. And Matt Bryan has had such an interesting career because there was a couple different stages where he almost was out of football. At least he was out of a job. You know, he got the start with the Giants. They moved on. He had a cup of coffee with the Colts, Dolphins. He ends up having a pretty good run with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers move on, and then suddenly he's just had this resurgence and really had the best years of his career in Atlanta. I know last year wasn't exactly everything I'm guessing he hoped for in only making 14 of 18 kicks, but the fact that, you know, 93.8 percentage right now, and the fact that he has a pretty good leg for 41 years old, he's a guy that they're going to have to be cognizant of, and certainly in that dome, he's incredibly comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll shift gears after the break and talk about the Falcons' defense a little bit. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, with Atlanta's defense, statistically we're talking about almost the polar opposite of the offense. They are ranked 31st in the league against the pass. They are ranked 27th in the league in points allowed. Not too bad against the run, but I think a lot of that has to do with Atlanta's offense. They've had teams playing from behind and having to throw the ball, and that contributes to the 31st ranked defense against the pass. This is the side of the ball that Atlanta is still trying to figure out. Dan Quinn, the head coach, came over after coordinating that stellar defense for the Seattle Seahawks there in those back-to-back Super Bowl trips for the Seahawks, but they don't seem to quite have all the pieces in place yet. Some guys you got to watch out for.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've kind of had this, I don't want to say it's been an edict, but I mean, for the last 3 years, they've really been trying to make some consolidated efforts to improve their holdings on the defensive side of the ball, because it isn't just this year in terms of some of the inconsistency. It's been something that's sort of haunted them the last few seasons and getting into some shootouts. They still, it appears, they basically operate out of a base 4-3 defense, but actually it's Vic Beasley, their linebacker, outside linebacker, that's leading them right now at 6.5 sacks. So there are different ways they try to get after the quarterback. Quinn had a really successful run there, as many guys seem to have had out west. So now trying to bring those same principles with the Falcons. There are some guys you have to be cognizant for, but at the same time, it is interesting to see, as you said, statistically, there are areas where this Packers offense can succeed, and it'll be interesting to see, much like what happened with the depleted secondary against the Bears, if Aaron Rodgers and company can take advantage of those chances.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of things, though, with regards to this Falcons defense that catch my eye when I look at the statistics. One, they have 6 interceptions against the pass, and 2 of those have been returned for touchdowns. On top of that, they've only recovered 2 fumbles on defense, but there have been 9 fumbles they've had the potential to recover. So, you know, that's a percentage that's a little bit out of whack there. And so you don't really want to sleep on these guys as far as the turnover department. And over the last few years, as you mentioned, as they're trying to rebuild, get to where they want to be on defense, the pass rush has been a struggle for them. That's what they've been trying to get to, where they have a more consistent pass rush, can really impact games that way. And that's still not all the way there, but 11 sacks, I believe, in their last 3 games during this stretch now, where they've lost their last 2 in close down to the wire games. But 11 sacks in 3 games, maybe that pass rush is starting to make some noise.
Yeah, and as you said too, I mean, you're being able to generate some pressure on the opposing quarterback. It's going to lead to more opportunities for your secondary, and there are talented guys there. I mean, you look at Keanu Neal, and then, you know, Desmond Trufant, the pedigree that he has there, has been a starter for them for practically the last 3.5 seasons. So there are guys that I think they know that where they want to be able to get the big plays. It's just been a matter of doing that consistently. There's a lot of names on this defense. I mean, you look at Dwight Freeney, Brooks Reed, Adrian Claiborne, Jordan Babineau. I mean, there are guys there that people know about. It's just been about making that all actually work in unison and being able to generate that consistent pressure. But certainly, when you look at what they have, there are people you have to account for, and there'll be a tough task in terms of what they can throw at you.
Yeah, it's a veteran group on that defensive line, as you said, when you mentioned names like Claiborne and Freeney.
Courtney Upshaw.
Yeah.
You know?
It seems like anywhere Dwight Freeney goes, I mean, he's got the Hall of Fame spin move that has kept him in the league this long, and he still seems to remain productive with it. But the Packers' offensive line, as we've talked about, has been playing really well, has been protecting Aaron Rodgers very well. Hopefully, they stay on that track and can slow down that pass rush for the Falcons that seems to be picking up some steam.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things, too, when the Packers are going forward here, if they're going to continue pressing on with this, I don't want to call it a dink and dunk, but this short, quick, effective passing game, you need to stay clean in the pocket, and you also need to make sure that you avoid the holding calls, because any type of penalties that you generate in the trenches there are really going to throw a big wrench into that momentum. So they've done an excellent job of that. And I think when they're looking and dealing with a lot of these four-man rushes, they have not allowed teams to get home with four-man. They need to have to dedicate more blitzers, more bodies to the pass rush to have a chance at getting after Aaron Rodgers. And that's really been the biggest key. If you give him time, he's going to find an opening. And we saw so many times in that game against Chicago where that scramble drill came into effect and guys coming back to the ball really was a big catalyst in the Packers being able to have the success that they did. And it all starts up front. And certainly even with the running game too, a new running back there, but yet the Packers still find a way to get 100 yards rushing. That was also a very positive sign for them as well.
Yeah, we've seen Packers opponents in recent weeks really trying to rush to contain Aaron Rodgers, not so much rush to sack him. The Packers offensive line has been doing the job, but we still see when Rodgers is able to get out of the pocket, some of the plays he can make, and you wonder if this veteran group, these guys for the Falcons that have been around long enough, if they're going to be even that much more disciplined, perhaps, in not letting Rodgers escape.
Yeah, definitely. And that was one of the keys I thought last year in terms of, you look at what San Francisco dialed up against the Packers in ways that teams did have success against this offense. But at the same time, I think you're seeing a lot of things that Rodgers has done, whether it's the third down scrambles, being able to get out and extend plays, the third down efficiency in general. There are different things that it's so difficult to contain him in this offense, because if you take one finger out of one hole, the other one's going to come out. And, the water's going to come out of the dam there. So, I mean, right. That's kind of the way it is with Rodgers. You have to pick your poison. And I thought, especially in these four games they've won so far, they've done a really good job at being able to find ways to still get this offense moving.
Yeah, Packers number one in the league on offense and third down conversions, and that's something certainly going on the road into a noisy environment you'd like to see continue. So with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, with regards to Green Bay's defense, Mike McCarthy confirmed on Tuesday that second-year cornerback Demarius Randall had surgery on his groin injury, said he would be out this week, did not give a timeline other than that in terms of a potential return for Randall. And then Quentin Rollins, who's also been dealing with a groin injury, he spoke with reporters, said he's just taking it day by day as the week goes along. So we'll see what develops there with Rollins, if he's able to come back this week or if it may be another week yet. But either way, I think it flashes a pretty big spotlight once again on Ladarius Gunter and Dimitri Goodson in terms of the guys that are going to be charged with covering Julio Jones and trying to slow down this high-powered passing attack.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And that's the thing about those soft tissue injuries. I mean, whether it's the groin muscle, quad, calf, hamstring, whatever it might be, you got to make sure you take care of that, because it is whatever it is, a strain is a tear. So you want to make sure that you don't do anything to aggravate it and make it worse. I think the Packers saw that in 2013 with Casey Hayward. So you want to make sure that both Dimitri Goodson and Quentin Rollins, whatever their timelines are, don't rush themselves back. I thought it was a very positive sign for them last week, the way that they were able to navigate Chicago, despite not having their top three guys. I think you've seen Ladarius Gunter really respond. And you saw his physicality and his length really show up in that game against the Bears, and he's going to need that against Julio Jones.
Yeah.
Dimitri Goodson jumped right back into the fire, and I thought held his own. Certainly there's some areas there I'm sure he wants to clean up, but considering 2 weeks ago wasn't on the field at all, for him to get back into the saddle, I think said a lot. And also give credit to that secondary. Morgan Burnett and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix were all over the place, and there was a lot of plays where that ball was fluttering around in the secondary, and those guys were swarming to it. So it's going to take a collective effort like that again. I mean, that was the first thing Ladarius Gunter talked about after the game. It's a team win, and that's the way they're going to have to get through this, because without having those top three guys, that's a big challenge and something that the Packers are certainly going to have to learn from going forward.
Yeah, you mentioned those veteran guys in the back end, Morgan Burnett, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, Micah Hyde, who's been on the field constantly now. You see the leadership that they have, and you know, we talk to these guys in the locker room every week. They don't bat an eye at the fact that guys are out, that Randall's out and Sam Shields is on IR. Yeah, of course they want to have all their teammates there. You want to have your top guys there, but they're not sitting there hanging their heads and saying, "Oh, woe is us." You know, yeah, we have all these injuries to deal with. That's just not their approach.
Yeah.
I mean, and that goes a long way for these guys like Goodson and Gunter. Not that they lack any confidence in themselves, but they know that their teammates believe in them and their teammates look at it as a collective effort. Nobody's going to leave Ladarius Gunter on an island against Julio Jones for 65 snaps or whatever the Falcons are going to get on Sunday. Sure, sometimes he may be one-on-one depending on the scheme and the call, but this is going to be a group effort. I think Gunter has probably the primary job on Julio Jones, as you said, to use the physicality at the line of scrimmage to maybe try to disrupt some things. But it's going to be a group effort in that secondary to try to, prevent the big plays and make the Atlanta Falcons drive little by little down the field, not in big chunks.
Absolutely. And that was what the thing was last week. I mean, don't give them the big plays. Be able to limit them. And to your point, I mean, even with a guy like, let's say, Sam Shields is playing this game, you're not going to have him operating on an island for 70 plays against Julio Jones. I mean, that's a tall task for anybody, regardless if you're a Pro Bowler, an undrafted free agent, or just somebody that's just trying to, step in and fill a role. So there's going to be ways that you want to help him, much like there for, 6, 7, 8 years, the Packers were doing the same thing when they saw Calvin Johnson twice a year.
Yeah.
There's things you have to do to make sure you make life easier on your quarterbacks. Their job is to make sure that when they do have those isolation type routes and when they have to be able to stand up to it, they don't allow the big play to happen. And certainly with Gunter, I think you've seen the ability, you've seen him flash. And the fact that we've gotten to this point of the season, the Packers are 15th right now in pass defense, is a tribute to how they've kind of gradually learned from these mistakes the last few weeks and been able to improve themselves for the next game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Before we go to our last break, we'll take care of a little sponsor business here, Wes. At home or here in the stands, we all know that Green Bay fans give it their all, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious Chunky Chicken Broccoli Cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, trip to the Georgia Dome here for the Packers and a new stadium for you. Packers haven't been to the Georgia Dome since 2011. And this will be a new venue for you to venture into.
By my official count, I think I'm 10 stadiums away from being complete with the league, but then certainly the Georgia Dome, there'll be a new stadium now, so
yeah,
it'll probably stay at 10. But I'm excited to see it. I was only in Atlanta one time, I think, in my life, other than going through the airport. So it's going to be a new experience. I think it'll be something cool to behold. And if I heard anything, the situation down in New Orleans in terms of the open air press box where you hear it, but it sounds like it still gets pretty loud there. So
yeah, it is. It's an open air press box. I've been there a couple of times. It's but unlike the Superdome in New Orleans, where the press box is all the way up at the top and you're by the roof, we'll actually be sitting kind of in a mezzanine type level.
So it's kind of more like the Metrodome
and lower
ones.
Deck. Yeah. And so you're not dealing with sound wise as much of the echo, you know, coming off the ceiling, but it is indoors, and yes, it does get pretty loud, and those fans, certainly with the way Atlanta's offense gets rolling and as explosive as they can be, they can get loud in a hurry.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly with that offense, there's something to get loud for. I mean, that's, you want to get your offense into a game. You have a receiver with 800 receiving yards through five or six games. So, for his perspective with Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, I can see why they play so well to their style. There was a couple of years there where people talked about how well Aaron Rodgers played in those environments as well. So it's not also like it's going to be a foreign concept to the Packers. They've had success there as well. So it'll be interesting to see exactly which side of it wins out.
Yeah, I think with the Packers being there, it's always interesting to me. First time now in 5 years that the Packers will be there. There's a lot of guys on this roster because the Packers are such a young team and there's so much roster turnover. A lot of guys, I mean, maybe some guys might have played a game there in college or something, but a lot of guys on this roster maybe haven't been to the Georgia Dome. Again, you know, kind of a new stadium for them, but certainly the memories for Aaron Rodgers, the playoff game in 2010, the comeback from a 14-0 deficit in 2011. Packers have some good memories in that building, and we'll see if they can maybe make another one Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and certainly, too, you look at the primary people in this offense, when you talk about T.J. Lang and Brian Bulaga, Aaron Rodgers, there's a lot of guys that have had experience playing in that atmosphere. So maybe while they won't be as accustomed to it as they were with the Metrodome, this still gives them a lot of opportunities to be comfortable and to find a level of comfort in that no-huddle offense, still have to decide to go that way, because really, that's where the Packers, I thought, in the second half turned a corner with their no huddle against Chicago. So to see how that can act now that you get back into that kind of environment will be something I'll be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, for sure. And for anybody who missed the announcement a couple weeks ago, the game was pushed back to 3:25 Central Time. It's not a noon kickoff, which means a little bit later flight home for you and me.
Spoff will get to sleep in, though, a little bit, so that'll be nice.
Yeah, Sunday morning we get to sleep in a little bit more, so we'll take advantage of that. With that, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.